Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Stanleyville, Paris, 13th District, and The Duke. Now that, I think, is, as somebody used to say, variety. That's variety.
It certainly is, yeah. One of our days when we're going to hop around from one thing to another. Also, we have a Canadian film followed by a French film followed by a film from the UK. So that's what we're doing. It's a big international day today for us. My gosh, I hope you're well rested, Jill.
Absolutely, and raring to go.
So let us begin. Also, two of these are named after places in a way, but only in a way. The first one that I would like to talk about is called Stanleyville. And this is the first feature film directed by Maxwell McCabe-Locos, who also co-wrote the script. And this is a very strange and it's kind of interesting movie. It's not a great film, but it's one of those movies where you really can pretty much never tell what is going to happen next. And that's what's kind of interesting and fun about it, even though the fun is sometimes pretty dark. So what we have here, we begin the movie with a young woman her name is Maria, and she is very discontented with her life. That's just signaled to us right away. She is apathetic. She doesn't care about her job. She doesn't care about anything. In fact, right at the beginning, she just gets up and walks out of her job. That's the end of that. She wants nothing more to do with the life that she's been leading. So what is going to happen to her? Well, there she is, and she is just kind of out there in the city somewhere, and this very odd little man comes up to her, and he tells her that his name is Homunculus, and he starts talking to her about a contest that she can join. And this contest will not just give her a chance to win something. The prize turns out to be an SUV, by the way, but it will change her life. In fact, the man says, research data shows that everything you have done in your life has led to this moment and the next moment and the moment that follows into the end. Well, of course, that doesn't really mean anything, but she is fascinated by this. And she starts to think maybe there is actually a chance for a whole new life, a whole new beginning, a whole new adventure, a whole new something, which is just what she has been so desperate for. So she decides to join this contest, which is all that the man is talking about, Homunculus. And so she ends up going to this place where the contest is going to be held, and there are several other contestants there. They're very different kinds of people, men, women, people who seem pretty smart, people who don't seem very smart, but they're all really eager to be in the contest. And most of them seem to be really fixated on winning the SUV. But Maria, she seems to feel that this is somehow a way that she can maybe reconnect with life in some way or other. So that's what it's all about. And she is at the center of the film, even though there are these other contestants and there is Homunculus and so forth. We do have Suzanne West doing a very nice job of playing the main character. So what is the contest about? What do you have to do? There seem to be, well, there are a number of challenges, one after another, a certain number of challenges. And the first one turns out to be blowing up as many balloons as you can in a minute. Okay, that's not so hard. So, okay, they're doing that. As the contest, and by the way, it only takes a minute. But after a while, the tasks become stranger. For example, some of them are going to take hours and hours and hours to be able to perform, and none of them are allowed to leave this hotel room or this little hotel suite where the contest is taking place, so they have to stay there. At one point, one of the challenges is that they have to write a national anthem that will apply to the whole world. That's a pretty interesting challenge right there. Another one is you have to put the contents of this box that we will give you in the proper order. Only the contents of the box appear to be nothing but purely random objects, and it's impossible to tell what in the world the proper order might be. So it's that sort of thing, moving from one challenge to another. Some of them very challenging. Oh, at one point, you have to bring an earlobe and present it to the contest organizer. Things like this, very odd and peculiar. And the movie proceeds along this very unpredictable course. Now, why is it called Stanleyville? Oh, what a good question. It appears that those words, or excuse me, that the name comes from the famous Dr. Stanley, the famous explorer who said the famous line, Dr. Livingstone, I presume. Apparently, it comes from that because this movie is about a sort of a quest, people trying to win this contest, and especially our main character, Maria, trying to win the contest, and it becomes a kind of an exploration, in a way, an exploration of herself. But that makes the movie sound much more coherent and philosophical than it really is. It's really very, very quirky. It has some very, very dark material in it, has some very amusing material in it, but above all, you can never tell where it's going to go next. And since it's not all that long a film, I had a good time just being in that very bizarre, very strange world of Stanleyville for a while. So if you're in the mood for something really, really unpredictable and sort of inexplicable, Stanleyville might be the movie for you. If you want something more rational, maybe one of the other movies I'm about to talk about now might be more up your alley. Speaking of alleys, a second movie I'd like to talk about is called Paris 13th District. The original French title is Les Olympiades, Paris 13e. And Les Olympiades is actually a neighborhood in Paris. And it was built back in the 60s. And it's big high-rises. And it has a lot of immigrants living there and so forth. And the movie, to some extent, deals with that because some of the characters are immigrants to France. But that's not really the main focus of the movie. It's just an important fact about a number of the characters. So we have, anyway, a movie here which is named after a district in the city of Paris in France. And it is one of these movies with multiple characters who kind of intersect and intertwine in various ways as the movie proceeds. So the first person that we meet is a young woman. She is a Chinese immigrant to France, and her name is Emily, and she has to get a new roommate because her roommate has moved out, and her mother is after her to get a new roommate. So, okay, she puts in an ad for a roommate, and she expects a young woman named Camille to show up for an appointment. Only Camille turns out to be a man, turns out to be an African immigrant to France. And at first she says, wait a minute, I wanted a woman roommate. I don't think I want you. But then, okay, they start to talk, and they kind of get along. And before you know it, not only are they roommates, but yes, this is a movie, and it's the sort of thing that does happen. The next thing you know, they're lovers. So that's it. We have Emily and Camille, who meet in this sort of cute meet way, and then they become lovers. But the movie does not focus on them forever after. They remain very important characters in the movie. But we meet other characters along the way, and sometimes their lives of these different characters who have separate experiences sort of intersect. The most important character in the movie is one we meet in sort of the second part, who is a woman named Nora. And she is a sex worker. She's actually, I shouldn't say that. She's actually a law student. And I'm mistaking her with the sex worker whose name is Amber Sweet. So we meet Nora, who is a law student. And then we meet a sex worker named Amber Sweet, who does internet porn. And one of the movies has this bright, vivid, totally out of the blue sequence of richly colored internet porn that sort of hits you in the face. So, okay, that's a bit of a surprise. But what happens is that Nora, the law student, looks a bit like the porn performer Amber Sweet. And the first thing you know, all of her fellow law students at the school are mistaking her for Amber Sweet and thinking that one of their law school classmates is this porn performer, and she can't seem to set them straight. And even when people believe her, they still make fun of her, and it turns into a very big deal, and it sort of really, really sort of ruins her life. So there's a comic element to this, but we also see the kinds of really, really nasty things that can happen when a person is mistaken for somebody who is involved in a disreputable activity like sex porn. And again, it really, really damaged her life. And so we have the plight of Nora. But of course, eventually, she decides she's got to get in touch with the woman who she looks so much like, Amber Sweet. And they are played by different actors. They don't look exactly alike, but you can see there's a resemblance there. So she gets to know Amber Sweet by making appointments to do some sex porn with her on the internet. And the first thing you know, they're getting along together, and they're becoming good friends by long distance, and then you wonder, will they eventually meet? And if they do, what will happen then? And again, we have a few other minor stories that are woven in, but the main stories are the stories of Emily and Camille, and they break up, and then they come back together again, and they have other relationships, and then intertwined with that in a way, we have the story of our law student, Nora, and the travails that she undergoes when she is mistaken for this woman who does sex porn on the internet. So, okay, Jacques Audiard is a director who can do a lot, who made this film, by the way, Jacques Audiard, who does a lot of different kinds of things. His last major film was a movie called A Prophet, which was about a young Arab man stuck in a French jail, prison, penitentiary, and it's a harrowing and violent story. Paris 13 District is much more gentle than that. I will let everybody know that there's a whole lot of sex in this movie, a whole lot of nudity, a whole lot of sex goes on in Paris 13th District, at least in the movie thereof. So if that's a selling point for you, then run out and see this movie. If that's something you don't want to see, then stay away from it. I found it rather more than the movie really needed. I thought that after a while, Jacques Audiard was sort of satisfying his own sort of maybe not highest impulses. But it's a very beautifully directed movie, and above all, it is gorgeously shot. Almost the whole movie is in glistening black and white, and it is just a superb-looking movie. And if you like seeing attractive young performers in a movie that is shot with glistening, beautiful, pristine shades of black and white, all set in Paris, then Paris 13th District is really worth seeing, if only for that reason. And our final movie today, again, something really different, The Duke. This is a movie which is directed by Roger Michel, who unfortunately died just recently. And this was a movie that was actually finished a couple of years ago, and its release was delayed by the pandemic, but now it is finally getting out into movie theaters, and so it is sort of a nice little swan song for Roger Michel. His more important movies include Notting Hill and Enduring Love and My Cousin Rachel, pretty major director, British director. And The Duke is a lovely, lovely little movie. It's a minor film, but it's just so enjoyable, largely because of its stars. The fabulous Jim Broadbent, who has been one of the great British actors for decades now, and then Helen Mirren, who has been one of the great British actors also for decades now. The two of them play an aging couple, and all this is based on a true story. I'm sure that a lot of the stuff along the way is fictionalized, but it's based on stuff that really happened, and that makes it all the more amusing and interesting. So it's called The Duke because another character in this movie is a painting, a very, very painting of the Duke of Wellington, painted by the great Spanish painter Francisco Goya. And it was in the National Gallery in London. And way back in the early 60s, this aging man who was a taxi driver, his name is Kempton Bunton, stole the painting and held it for ransom. Well, why would this old taxi driver do that? Is it because he just lost his job as a taxi driver in London? Well, maybe he lost his job because he won't stop talking to the passengers. Or maybe it's for other reasons. He's obviously one of those famous British eccentrics. He's eccentric. He's odd. He's peculiar. He has all sorts of ideas in his head. He can't resist saying them to everybody else he comes across. And he, above all, feels there's tremendous injustice in the world. One of the earlier things that happens in the world is he is proclaiming about the injustice that he has to have a television license. That was a very big British thing. Has to have a television, even though he doesn't watch the BBC, which is what the television license pays for. So why should he have to do this? And he's giving a speech on a soapbox, and he's refusing to pay the tax. Things like this are what Kempton does. His wife is long-suffering. Stop it, Kempton. Stop doing these ridiculous things. Just let's live our ordinary life. Go out and get yourself another job. But he is always fighting one sort of injustice or another, or what he thinks is one sort of injustice or another. And now he's gotten his hands on this painting, this fabulous painting by one of the world's great painters. And so what does he do? He hides it in a wardrobe, a bureau in his house, and decides to hold it for ransom. And the ransom that he has demanded will pay for food and stuff like that to help the poor. So now he is involved in this big crime, but for what he regards are as extremely noble reasons. And again, his wife is on the sidelines. Why are you doing these terrible things? And she doesn't know about the stolen painting, although she finds out. And they also have a young son, and he gets involved in the story. And it turns out he's involved in ways we don't expect. There's sort of a twist in the movie, fairly late in the story, that explains why the young son is a very important character in the movie. So it's a movie which it's a comedy, although it's based on real things. things. And what it has above all are this wonderful, quirky main character, this oddball, this eccentric, who really believes he is helping the world by these sort of harebrained schemes of his. And he is played to perfection by the marvelous Jim Broadbent. He's been playing eccentrics of various sorts for decades and decades, and nobody does it better than him. And Helen Mirren, of course, is an actor who can do virtually anything. And it's also just wonderful to see her in this movie. It's not a major film. It's very lightweight, but I really had a good time looking at it. Above all, I had a good time looking at these wonderful performers and thinking it's very nice that a good director, not one of my favorites, but a good director like Roger Michell, who died very recently and very suddenly, got to go out on a very high and warm and lovely note like The Duke. So I really do recommend it. It's my favorite of these three movies today. The Duke, a good movie. Go see it. And that is my international story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Stanleyville, Paris 13th District, and The Duke.